Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Oh, so many people. The organization, my teammates, my family, my agent, Joe Clark, Adam, Andrea, all my past goalie coaches, Wade Flaherty. So many people that go into this, and, you know, this wasn't built overnight, and I could waste all your time today just thanking people.
Thanksgiving is canceled unless you're Connor Hellebuck giving thanks to all the people who contributed to his Vezina Trophy winning season.
I'm surprised he didn't give us a thanks.
We had nothing to do with his season at all, and he has nothing. No idea who we are, so I'm not the least bit surprised. I might know who you are. Yeah, maybe a little, Dave.
I did cover him in the AHL.
That's true. You are the AHL insider. So you've been there from day one for him. So I'm sure you are on the next wave of thank yous. They just didn't quite get to that. Unfortunately, we have the next wave of COVID coming through, which means that Thanksgiving for a lot of people is going to look different this year than it has Smaller groups. Keep the numbers small. Keep the curve going down. And with that, it is a Saturday morning. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're with you for the next 3 hours. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to talk about the Stanley Cup Final, which may come to an end as early as tonight, as the Tampa Bay Lightning win in overtime last night. They take a commanding 3-1 lead. We're going to talk about the NHL draft, and we're going to be joined by a player, a draft-eligible player that a lot of people are maybe thinking could end up in a Winnipeg Jets uniform. That coming up in the final hour. Seth Jarvis, Winnipeg-born player, plays for the Portland Winterhawks, possibly available in and around that number 10 position. He's going to join us in hour number 3 of this morning's program. Without further ado, I do say good morning to Dave Minuk, who's shaking his head at the poor performance of his laptop over there.
Correct.
Are you going to be able to get through the show with it, or is it?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out.
Is it going to be thrown out the window and right into the pond?
You can share mine, Dave.
You got to keep your 6 feet of distance, and that's true with you, regardless of if it's COVID or not COVID. You just want to keep your 6 feet of distance from you.
That's also true.
And that, of course, the other man on across from us in the room here is Ezra Ginsberg. Ezra, good to see you on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, good to see you guys too. We could have a Stanley Cup winner tonight. You mentioned it, and you know, pretty incredible. And you know, based on the way the officials were calling penalties in the third period and overtime, I think the officials want to get out of the bubble. I think at this point, everybody wants to get out of the bubble, except maybe the Dallas Stars, who are obviously, you know, trying to force a game 6. But, you know, pretty exciting finish to yesterday's game. You obviously, you know, don't like to see Jamie Benn in the penalty box. And, you know, we can debate that a little bit later, because I think there was definitely, you know, an argument to be had there that that wasn't a penalty. Tyler Johnson was running a little bit of a, you know, pick interference, whatever you want to say. But Tampa Bay's up 3-1, and, you know, you got to love the fact that, you know, Tampa Bay is overcoming last year's, you know, sweep at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, you know, a really good game, you know, last night, but also a lot to talk about with, you know, the draft and free agency coming up.
Absolutely. Let's get into it first, though, with the Winnipeg Jets and sort of the worst-kept secret, but we all expected to come to fruition, did come to fruition earlier this week, with Winnipeg Jets goaltender Connor Hellebuck being awarded the Vezina Trophy, also being awarded, of course, as the first-team NHL All-Star goaltender. Now, that's different, of course, than the All-Star game. This is the end-of-season balloting when they come out with the first team players throughout the league. No surprise that Hellebuck wins, obviously. You know, so the question I have for you guys is this coming season, next year, whenever it starts, and frankly, who knows when that's going to be at this point in time, do the Jets need Hellebuck to perform at the same level to be as successful or more successful? Or could he have a bit of a step back, not a significant step back, but maybe, you know, a bit of a regression to the mean or a little bit above the mean, and the Jets still be successful, Dave?
Well, I mean, that obviously depends on how the team is, you know, continues to get built. I mean, yeah, obviously you're going to want to have Connor Hellebuyck perform the way Connor Hellebuyck has performed for, you know, a number of seasons for this team. And but that's not super realistic to think that he's going to be able to do what he was able to do again this season if everything was the same. Now, I would suspect that the Jets' defensive makeup will be different this season, like you said, whenever that actually begins. And you may have an opportunity for some guys to step into that lineup and be better than what the Jets had last year. And, you know, whether that's through trade, whether that's through some of the draftees that we'll talk about that the Jets have in the organization, I suspect the Jets' blue line will be better. Now, will the Jets' systems and structure overall be better to help them? You hope so, based on the fact that, again, like you said, you have better players in it. So I would think that you could probably have Connor Hellebuyck regress slightly. He's still going to have to be very good. He's still going to have to be Connor Hellebuyck. Mm-hmm. But I think that you're going to have a better team around him than you did last season.
So he needs to be a top 10 NHL goaltender, not necessarily a top 2 NHL goaltender.
Yeah, but I think that's what he's kind of established himself to be. I mean, he's a Vezina finalist from two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. He's a Vezina winner now. I think Connor Hellebuyck has established himself as one of the preeminent goaltenders in the NHL. I think a lot of people, you know, didn't know if that was a, you know, an anomaly a couple of seasons back. But I think you're seeing a guy who, especially in light of the lineup that was in front of him this year, has established himself as one of the top goaltenders in the NHL.
Right. And, you know, just taking a step back, if Hellebuyck didn't win the Vezina, I probably would have protested and not done the show this weekend because
really?
He doesn't know.
We would have rigged the balloting. Don't tempt us.
No, I'm obviously joking, right, boys? But, I mean, he deserved it. Hellebuyck deserved it, right? Like, when you talk about, you know, these major trophies, right, and there are some fans that don't put as much stock, or some broadcasters or, you know, hockey people that don't put as much stock into the awards. But here in Winnipeg, because he had such a good individual season, and I can hear, you know, an argument all day long about Hellebuyck deserving the Hart Trophy. Like, for me, it doesn't even matter if a team makes the playoffs. And I remember we had that debate a couple of years ago with Connor McDavid, right, when the Oilers didn't make the playoffs, right? Like, to me, the Hart Trophy can go to somebody who doesn't make the playoffs. Like, it's based on the regular season anyways, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you're right, Dave. Hellebuyck is a bonafide, you know, top five, top three goalie in the league. He was the best goalie in the league last year, so you could even say he is the best goalie. I personally, you know, still think Carey Price is the best goalie in the league, and I think Tuukka Rask is in that conversation as well. But he's, at the very least, like, unless you weren't watching hockey and you haven't looked at Connor Hellebuyck's statistics, you wouldn't think he's a top five goalie. But if you watched him play last year and you looked at his goals saved above expectation, you know, he is, at the very least, a top three goalie and was the best goalie last year. So you're absolutely right. And we shouldn't expect anything less out of Hellebuyck. Maybe he plays, you know, a little bit less next year. Maybe, you know, whether it's Lauren Brossoit or another backup goalie, you know, there's a little bit of that load management. Because I think when you go back to March, with the Jets, I believe, having 10 regular season games left, I think, you know, prior to COVID, we were talking about, you know, Hellebuyck possibly playing 9 out of those 10 games. Like, Hellebuyck would have been around 70 starts last year, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not 70, but, you know, 65 or, you know, 67, whatever. But, you know, the point being, I think you maybe want to play him a little bit less next year, because we know that, you know, ideally you want your number one goalie to be somewhere around, you know, 50 to 60 games, not 60 to 70. But, you know, absolutely, Drew, going back to, you know, talking about next year, I mean, the Jets are going to need Hellebuyck to be excellent because, you know, they're not an elite team right now. I mean, they're going to try to make some moves that's going to put them back in that elite category. But even if you bring in, you know, a top pairing right side defenseman, or you re-sign Dylan DeMello, and, you know, you bring in, you know, a second pairing left side defenseman, you know, the Jets are still going to be a young team that, you know, is still trying to find their way defensively. I mean, the last year was a pretty significant step back for them defensively. And, you know, we've documented, you know, all the guys they lost on the right side, but it wasn't just that. I mean, they lost some other good defensive forwards as well, right? And, you know, Brian Little was one of them. They didn't have him for the majority of the season. So we shouldn't expect anything less out of Hellebuyck next year. He's going to be excellent, and that's what I think this year proved, right? Like, going into the season, and you go back to that first game against the Rangers, right? He struggled. I think he let in 4 or 5 goals, if I'm not mistaken. I remember that Mark Stahl wraparound, but the point is that I think this year, I mean, you know, if you didn't already know what you were going to get out of Hellebuck, he proved this year that, you know, 99% of the time you're going to get an A-plus performance.
And the Jets needed it, because without his performance, we all know where they were going to be this year, and that's why he was a deserving winner of the Vezina Trophy. We don't have the Vezina Trophy is, of course, voted on by the general managers of the NHL. Mm-hmm. They choose not to release their ballots, but apparently one GM did not have Connor Hellebuck on his ballot, which is, you know, frankly, malpractice, but, you know, que sera, sera, nothing you can do about that. Worth noting, because I actually went through this, I was interested in it, in the PHWA, the Professional Hockey Writers Association.
Yep.
They're the ones who vote on the All-Star teams. Linda Cohn of ESPN and Andrew Gross, our buddy of Newsday, did not have Connor Hellebuck as either their first, second, or third place goaltenders for the NHL's All-Star team.
Linda Cohn, former goaltender.
She played goalie?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. And I'm not sure what Linda and what Andrew were watching this year, but for whatever reason, they didn't have Connor Hellebuck in their top three when it came to the All-Star voting at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's surprising. Like, I can't remember in recent memory a goaltender that was this much of a clear-cut favorite. And mm-hmm. It wasn't just here in Winnipeg, guys, right, Dave? Like, it wasn't like, you know, we just really thought Hellebuck should win the Vezina. It was across the hockey world, whether, you know, it's in Toronto or New York or BC. I mean, Kevin Woodley has talked about many times how Hellebuck, you know, the strides that he's made in his game. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to Hellebuck. We posted on the website, you know, he had a great interview with Hellebuck, you know, talking about his season. And, you know, Woodley would tell you that, hands down, Hellebuck was the best goalie in the NHL. So it's really surprising. Obviously, Andrew Gross, you mentioned, is a good friend of the show. We've had him on many times covering, you know, the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils.
Yeah.
So it's pretty surprising. Yeah, it's pretty surprising that, you know, he wasn't even on the ballot.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand that, but, you know.
Who did they vote for? Do you remember?
I'd have to look it up. I mean, I believe it was Vasilevsky and Rask, and I can't remember necessarily.
I don't want to call it an East Coast bias.
I'm going to say there was an East Coast bias involved. Yes, there's no question in my mind. It was Vasilevsky and Rask, and I'll have to look up to see the third one.
It's possible that, you know, it was Jacob Markstrom. Jacob Markstrom was another guy that, you know, some observers thought should have been a finalist, but when you're talking about Vasilevsky and Tuukka Rask, guys, it's pretty hard to argue with those three finalists.
Well, you have to pick three guys. So, I mean, there was certainly other people who had Hellebuck third as opposed to first, but these were the only two voters who did not have him on at all. That's the only part that was that, you know, that would jumped out at me, of course, is why they didn't have him on there at all.
Right.
Here it is. Vasilevsky, Carey Price, and Frederick Anderson is who Linda Cohn voted for. I'm not quite sure I understand, certainly the Freddie Anderson vote, or even Carey Price wasn't that great during the regular season this year.
He had some stretches, but yeah.
He had some stretches, which I thought. Anyways, so those are the three he voted for.
She, yes.
And let's see if I can pull up the one for Andrew Gross here, Dave. You're putting me on the spot. But,
well, that's fine. No, I told you right after. I said if you knew it, it's fine, but I don't really care that much.
It's okay. I got your wish is my command there, buddy. Anyways, it's good for Connor Hellebuck. That's what it basically boils down to, is that Connor Hellebuck.
Well, I mean, what it does is it shows what happens. It rewards hard work. The guy works hard at his craft. And, you know, he gets pilloried sometimes for some of his bizarre comments post game, which, for the record,
are they bizarre, or is it just a goalie that hates to lose?
No,
like, I don't think. I feel like Hellebuck is as much of a straight shooter as you're going to get.
No, he is. But I'm saying that, like, when you say I love my game, but you've given up 5 goals, you know, sometimes he gets made fun of for that kind of stuff. You know, I mean,
but he obviously does love his game. He's a confident guy. Just because, you know, he let in 5 goals, Dave, doesn't mean that.
Well.
You know, All I'm saying is, like, I think, you know, sometimes we want him to say, I sucked. I let in 5 goals. I really sucked. He does not speak in cliches.
I think what it boils down to is, and I don't know this for fact, but what I'm going to assume is that, you know, he works, like most of these top flight professional athletes often work with a sports psychologist, and perhaps, and again, I don't know this for fact, but I'm assuming.
Pretty sure we should be working with a sports psychologist.
We should be working with a psychologist.
Maybe drop the sports part, but okay.
I assume that, you know, part of his mental preparation is to never audibly, verbally, get down on himself.
Sure.
Right. And that's not his there's a disconnect.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
right?
There's nothing wrong. There's certainly a disconnect sometimes between what he says
and reality.
And the reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's under no obligation to, you know, be especially critical in the media of his own play.
For sure.
I'm sure that behind the scenes, when he goes and he evaluates the game and his game, he notices and points out and criticizes himself, but just because we're not there and other members of the media aren't there doesn't mean it doesn't happen, and he's under no obligation when speaking to the media to, you know, throw himself under the bus for our, you know, listening enjoyment, for lack of better terminology.
Yeah, I mean, and again, what all I was going to say was that, you know, it's interesting because in the AHL he didn't have that sort of same
approach.
But I would say the difference, I mean, and it could be something you've talked about. It could be something, you know, working with a mental health coach to figure out the best approach for him. Because, of course, in the AHL, you're just learning. The thing is, who's he talking to at postgame? It would have been like Mitch and I.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't like there was like 30 reporters postgame looking to have a conversation with him, looking to, you know, drag him down. You know, it's more just, It's a different type of conversation in the AHL than it would have been in the NHL.
Dave, we've talked about this before. The two guys I think that are probably the best interviews on the Jets are Hellebuyck and Andrew Copp. And when you talk
Lowry too, for sure.
Yeah,
and Morrissey.
You can throw in, and I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, articulate answers, because Morrissey's articulate and Lowry's articulate. I'm more so talking about like the way they speak kind of off the cuff, right? And Hellebuyck, I think the point you were trying to make is that people criticize what he says. It's not necessarily bizarre, but it's just because he's so confident, sometimes it comes across, maybe it catches people a little off balance, right? And there's definitely no doubt that he's a confident guy, Hellebuyck, right? And, you know, this season, I think, if you think about everything that was happening in Winnipeg, and we don't have to, go through all of it, but all of the different defensemen in front of him, all of the injuries, all of the ups and downs, right? The Jets were in a playoff spot, and the Jets were basically just outside of a playoff spot, right? Hellebuyck was good game after game. He had, the odd stinker. He had that bad game at the beginning of the season, and there were a few games sprinkled throughout the season that, you know, he wasn't the best. And, you know, in the playoffs, he'd probably tell you himself he wanted to be better. But overall, what a season. Like, goals saved above expectation, for those who don't know, is a stat that basically tells you more than just save percentage, right? And he was hands down ahead of most goalies in the league.
He was number two behind, I think, Rask, but Rask played 17 fewer games. So I think he was... It's interesting, like, different sites have different ways, but I use Hockey Reference, and Hockey Reference had Rask at 22 and Hellebuyck at, like, 21.46.
And so then look at the defense that Boston had versus the Jets' defense.
And again, Rask played 17 fewer games. So, I mean, just goes to show you, like, how much of a difference that can be.
Certainly a deserving Vezina Trophy winner in Connor Hellebuyck. When we come back, there's lots of talk about what the defense is going to look like in front of him next year. Is Matt Dumba, currently of the Minnesota Wild, one of those options for the Winnipeg Jets? We discuss that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Loose for Eriksson Ek. The fourth line goes back to work for the Wild. Eriksson Ek banks it down to Winnick. Daniel Winnick drops it back to Dumba. Launch and scores!
From back in 2018, the playoffs, game three between the Wild and the Winnipeg Jets. We remember the Jets winning that series in five, but game three was the one that the Wild won, and that was Matt Dumba scoring for the Wild against the Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So Matt Dumba's name is in the news reports as of late there, Mr. Ginsburg, and that's largely due to the fact that the Minnesota Wild signed their defenseman, Jonas Brodin, to a 7-year, $42 million contract extension. That, you know, signing Brodin to that extension allowed people to connect the dots and say, okay, this makes a Matt Dumba trade more likely, because with the upcoming expansion draft, the Minnesota Wild will be in trouble at that point in time. They wouldn't theoretically be able to protect all three of their, all four of their defensemen unless they go with the eight skaters, one goaltender phenomenon, and as a result, they would have some serious money tied up on the back end of their defense. Does Matt Dumba make sense for the Winnipeg Jets to fill that hole on the Jets' right side of their defense?
Yeah, Drew, it absolutely makes sense because he's a really good defenseman. We all know the reason why it doesn't make sense, because not only do the Minnesota Wild need a top six center, they need a number one center, right? Like, they don't have a number one center right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you trade Eric Staal and you tell Mikko Koivu, your captain, you know, that he's not returning, you have a big void there up the middle. Like, obviously, Koivu was not the number one center. He was actually on the fourth line, you know, towards the end of the season and earlier parts of the season. But, you know, for me, Matt Dumba is a guy that definitely has his defensive deficiencies, you know, if you'll pardon the alliteration there. But he's a great offensive defenseman. And I think, you know, is he a perfect fit for the Jets? I don't know if he's a perfect fit for the Jets because, you know, you wonder, are Josh Morrissey and Matt, would they make a good top pair, right? Because in theory, if you were trading to acquire Dumba, most likely, you know, he fits in somewhere, you know, either on the first pairing or the second pairing. And right now the Jets don't really have a quote-unquote, you know, second pairing left side defenseman, right? Like, you know, could that be Sammy Niku? I mean, even though, you know, he plays a lot on the right side, right? Let's say, you
it's
know,
definitely a hole that the Jets
it's
still
a hole,
have.
Right? So, I mean, in theory, Dumba could be a top-pairing defenseman. But, you know, going back to what you said before, Drew, about the expansion draft, you know, when all of these Matt Dumba trade rumors started, what I was thinking was, why can't the Wild work out another deal with the Seattle team, the Kraken? We have a name now, I forgot. Like, why couldn't the Wild and the Kraken work out a deal similar to what the Wild did with the Vegas Golden Knights, right? If you remember, mm-hmm. the Golden Knights acquired Alex Tuck prior to the expansion draft. And I believe it was only draft picks, if I'm not mistaken, that Minnesota got back. I don't know if there was anything else, but it couldn't have obviously been any players. So, I mean, that was obviously a great move for the Golden Knights with the way Tuck, you know, he was up to 9 or 10 goals in the playoffs. But that's what I was thinking. Like, why can't you still protect Dumba and just make, have a deal, a side deal that allows you to not have to worry about losing him? That's all I'm saying. But when you talk about, you know, Dumba's trade value, I think it's very high, but you have to think right now that Billy Guerin is asking for a lot for Dumba, because even though, as you mentioned, Drew, Brodin signs the contract, Brodin, you know, many of the analytics crowd basically think Brodin is the best defensive defenseman in the league. And even though Suter's getting up there in age, I mean, Suter's still an excellent defenseman, right? So, I mean, you've still got, and Spurgeon is the other guy that's in your top four. So you throw Dumba into that group. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very good top four. That's really the bread and butter, Dave, of the Wild is their defense. So all I'm saying is they're going to ask a lot for Dumba. And really, if you think about it, unless the Jets put together a package that involves, you know, Jack Roslovic and you know, a draft pick or another prospect, like, how do the Jets do that trade one for one if the asking price is a number one center, right?
Well, they obviously can't.
Or even a number two center. Like, I look at the Wild and Marcus Johansson, if you watched him last year, I mean, first off, he played the majority on the wing with the Sabres. He's not a guy that's necessarily going to be penciled in as a top six center. Who else do you have there? Right? Like, you've got Nick Bjugstad. Is he a third line center? Is he a fourth line center? Dave, Joel Eriksson Ek. What is he? He's not a top line center.
No. So, Dave, what, if you're the Jets and if you're seriously interested in acquiring Dumba, and there's obviously big ifs there, what would you be comfortable giving up to get a player of his ilk? Or do the Jets just not have what the Wild
they
would
don't.
Be looking for?
I mean, that's why when I heard this, I was like, but they're, like, Bill Guerin is specifically saying, he said two things. He said, I want a top six center. Okay, well, Jets don't have that to trade, so that eliminates the Jets right there. He said, or a name that's going to make me go wow. Well, the only names that make you go wow on the Winnipeg Jets that are, quote, rumored are Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. Both, quote, non-starters.
Throw in Ehlers or Laine in this conversation is absurd.
Let's stop right there. I want to play the audio from Insider Trading from earlier this week that discussed Patrick Laine and his possibility or his apparent being on the trade block.
Patrick Laine cracks the top five. Darren, are the Jets serious about potentially moving him?
Absolutely, they're serious. Look, I mean, Patrick Laine's name on the trade bait board isn't just eye candy or speculative. The Winnipeg Jets know what their needs are. They need a number two center, and they need to bolster the top four on their blue line. And Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager there, can't solely rely on free agency. What's curious about this, though, is that there hasn't been a lot of action around Patrick Laine. I mean, everyone in the National Hockey League can recognize that he is a star winger, so maybe clubs don't believe that he is available, or they're concerned about the economics moving forward as well, be it an extension or what an arbitration case for Patrick Laine might look like after next season. One way or another, Cheveldayoff is listening on Patrick Laine.
One team that has some interest in Patrick Laine at some level is the Columbus Blue Jackets, Dregs. Of course, they got ample salary cap room. They lost a big-time offensive threat a year ago when Artemi Panarin walked into free agency and never really replaced him. So, and certainly Jarmo Kekalainen has some insight on Patrick Laine. But what is the price? And I think they're kind of sitting in the weeds right now because of that. The Carolina Hurricanes, I'm told, are a team that have had a conversation with the Winnipeg Jets about Patrick Laine, but it didn't get very far. I don't know that the Hurricanes feel there's a fit there at this point. A team that could certainly use some elite scoring on their top line would be the Montreal Canadiens, but I'm told at this juncture that the Montreal Canadiens don't intend to get in on the Laine sweepstakes.
That's Darren Dreger and Pierre LeBrun from earlier this week in Insider Trading talking about that the Jets are listening on Laine, but apparently there's not a lot of, you know, conversations happening, which I know we sound like a broken record here, and I sound like a broken record, but none of this makes any sense anymore.
The best was like there was a headline on TSN that I linked to in the papers, and it was, would Winnipeg move Laine? And I wrote in my comments, I think the headline needs a why in front of it. Why would Winnipeg move Laine? Like, they're not doing it. Again, like, it's all well and good to put it out there and see. Look, sometimes when you're fishing, you just take a cast. You're like, that looks like a good spot. I'll just throw my line out there. But the reality is, so that, you know, unless something, like, it's funny because we had someone on Twitter say when they heard about the Columbus one, Laine and Roslovic for Dubois and Jones. That's an interesting one. That's interesting. But
that's the kind of trade you would then begin to maybe consider.
Yeah. No, seriously. Because then you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, that's something to think about, right?
Yeah.
But the point is that it's the reality. I mean, the truth is Columbus isn't doing that deal.
Of course Columbus isn't doing that
so,
deal.
So my point is, it's all well and good to have some fun speculation in that realm, but to me, it's just, I just think this is not much ado about nothing.
So you mentioned Pierre-Luc Dubois, right? Number one center for the Columbus Blue Jackets, right? So if Jarmo Kekalainen, as Pierre LeBrun mentioned, is interested in Patrick Laine, who are they giving up? Alex Wenberg, who they're talking about they might buy out?
Yeah.
Like, who are we talking about here? Like, the Vincent Trocheck, Brett Pesce for Patrick Laine deal does not make sense. Right, like, you wouldn't do
never
that
mind,
deal.
Does it not make sense? It's actually insulting
but
to float it.
Do you understand that LeBrun, in one of his, I think it was an Athletic one, said, if it's Brett Pesce, full stop for the Hurricanes. And I was like, what planet am I on right now?
If you made that trade, the rest of the NHL would say, okay, so you're reuniting Aho and Laine, who were so good together on Team Finland, right? Like, the rest of the NHL would absolutely despise that trade.
Never mind the rest of the NHL. Winnipeg, I mean...
Well, it would be a bad trade for the Jets, Drew. But
again, it's Chad Kilgour, Oleg Tavernovsky, over again.
We talked about this a month ago with, you know, bringing up a Jack Eichel. Like, Patrick Laine is up there, not only as a second overall pick 2015-2016, but talent level, like raw talent. So I don't think you're going to win a trade if it's for a second line center and a second pairing defenseman,
no,
like Trocheck and Pesce are. So that's the issue here. Like, if you don't think you're going to be able to sign Laine, then maybe you have to move him. But we don't know that. That's the big unknown here, guys. And when you think about what the Jets went through with Jacob Trouba and what they went through with Patrick Laine, right, because we weren't sure if Laine was going to sign the long-term deal or the bridge deal, they obviously don't want to go through this again. So that's the only reason, like we talked about a few weeks back, The only reason you're trading him is if you believe that you can't sign him long-term.
When we come back, we'll head out to Edmonton. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is within the bubble. Game 5 tonight between the Stars and the Lightning. We'll talk about that. We'll talk more about the Jets with Mike as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290.
Hot mic, Dave. Hot mic.
Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website, of course, with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the bubble in Edmonton, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, Mike McIntyre. You know Mike, of course, from his great work covering the Winnipeg Jets and covering the NHL for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I am very good, guys. Enjoying what could be the last day of the bubble. This 2.5 month little social experiment is on the verge of coming to an end, isn't it?
It is, after last night's victory by the Tampa Bay Lightning, a 5-4 overtime victory by the Lightning, Kevin Shattenkirk getting the OT winner. Do you get the impression, Mike, that, you know, yesterday's game, the Dallas Stars, you know, taking that 2-0 lead, they come back, they tie the game, they end up having a chance to win it on the power play in overtime, a 4-on-3 power play at that? Do you get the impression that that may have been their last stand, or do you think they still have more to give and more fight to put forward tonight in maybe extending this out to a game six?
No, it certainly feels to me like that was kind of their last gasp there, and losing the way they did. I suppose maybe the anger over that penalty that gets called against their captain, maybe they could channel that anger into something tonight, but it really does feel like the writing's on the wall and this series is now probably over, and deservedly so. I mean, I think even from game one, which Dallas won, the Tampa Bay Lightning have proven to be the far better team here. They're better on paper, and they're certainly better on the ice in the four games that have been played so far. They're just so deep, they can beat you in so many different ways, and we're seeing that now. And my goodness, the Dallas Stars, they can't stop shooting themselves in the feet. I mean, they can't get out of their own way. This is a team that takes way too many penalties, and you know, when you're giving the Tampa Bay Lightning with all that talent power play after power play after power play, you can debate, I guess, the minutiae of whether this one or that one was the right call. The fact is, you know, they're taking just too many penalties, and you know, three more power play goals last night, like, that's a recipe for failure, and we're seeing that come to fruition.
I absolutely agree with you, Mike. You know, three power play goals, 3-for-4, I believe it was yesterday. The Jamie Benn penalty, Rick Bonus was still steaming after the game. Joe Pavelski as well. Those guys were definitely not happy with the call, but, you know, the call was made, and, you know, the game is over. And, you know, we want to get to the Winnipeg Jets with you as well, but, you know, just sticking on the Stanley Cup final, because you're obviously in Edmonton covering it for the Free Press, you know, when you look at this, you know, series, you know, from a macro level, you know, with the Lightning up 3-1, is it just a matter of, you know, Anton Khudobin just hasn't looked very good, maybe with the exception of game one, and, you know,
right,
this team is just, you know, tired, and, you know, they're dealing with some injuries with Faxa and Como and now Rupe Hintz.
Well, and combine that with the fact that, I guess, up until last night, you know, their big stars had basically been AWOL, with the exception of Joe Pavelski. But, I mean, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, I know they got a couple points last night, but, you know, obviously Benn takes the overtime penalty. Alexander Radulov took a couple stupid penalties in Game 3, one of which proved to be costly. So, yeah, I mean, to me, Khudobin has looked very human, right? He was a great story, you know, through the first three rounds of these playoffs, but I think he's come back down to earth a little bit, which shouldn't surprise anybody given the workload that he's carrying, which for him is kind of unprecedented, right? And he's obviously an older goaltender who isn't used to playing nearly as much and certainly not on this kind of stage. And that's another reason, guys, to me, that it feels like this series is over and probably ends tonight. I assume Dallas is coming back with Khudobin tonight. I mean, unless unless Ben Bishop, who hasn't even dressed for any of these games, unless there's a miracle cure to whatever ails him, I don't think you're going with Jake Ottinger in the elimination game tonight. So, you know, Khudobin's looked very human these last three games. He's given up a lot of goals. And what's he got left in the tank, you know, now playing a back-to-back tonight? You know, I think if you look at how Dallas and Tampa stack up, I mean, Tampa excels in a number of areas and certainly goaltending, although Andrei Vasilevsky wasn't looking so good early in the game last night. What, 3 goals on 7 shots? That was very un-Vasilevsky-like, and you can't fault him on any of them. It was a case of, I guess, you know, quality over quantity for the Dallas Stars, but, I mean, in the end, he's proven to be the superior goaltender in this series, and, yeah, I mean, look, Dallas can complain all they want about that penalty. I'll say this, guys, in real time in the rink last night, I absolutely thought that he slew-footed, you know, the Tampa player there. It looked to me like Jamie Benn kicked his legs out. Now, I guess you can break it down on replay and it shows something a little different, but I see why the call got made. And let's not forget, Dallas was the beneficiary of an absolutely bogus embellishment call on Braden Point. Look at that play in the last few seconds of the third period. Corey Perry pretty much spears Braden Point. And, you know, the refs, I guess, don't want to award a power play to Tampa in that situation. So they basically make up an embellishment call to turn it into a 4-on-4. And then, like you said, they then get their own power play, you know, 4-on-3, just really about right off the hop in overtime. So they can't say they didn't have some breaks and chances. They really were their own worst enemy.
And I'm like, got to ask you about the environment. I mean, you're one of a handful of people who are witness to something historic in the NHL. So what has it been like just being in the arena as, just like I said, one of a, you know, however many people are there, but we know it's not very many. What's that experience been like? And just maybe let the listeners in on what it's like being inside the arena.
Well, you can hear everything. And when Jamie Benn took that penalty last night in overtime, I won't repeat the exact words that got said, but my goodness, you can hear the
CRTC Dallas thanks you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love the fact that they, in their barrage of profanities, they added in referee Kelly Sutherland's name. Like, it was bleep, 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 Kelly. I guess they were being tactful that way, but yeah, I mean, it's surreal. It really is, because you know they're playing for the biggest prize in hockey, and you can just hear everything. And you know, they've cranked up the fan noise within the rink. It's louder now than it was during the qualifying series that I was initially here at Edmonton to cover, you know, between the Jets and the Flames. So they've cranked that up a little bit. There are more people in the rink now than there were, you know, back in early August. Like, there's a handful of family members from both teams who are making a little bit of noise. There's all the Black Aces from both teams, and it's quite funny, guys. Like, you hear applause during, you know, plays. You hear some oohs and ahs like you would from a normal crowd. It's just you're hearing it from a couple dozen people instead of, you know, tens of thousands of people. You can also hear the cat calling on the officials from the Black Aces, which is quite funny. I didn't see it from my vantage point yesterday, but apparently one of the family members of one of the Dallas Stars players, who are obviously Canadian because that's the only family that got let into the bubble here for the final, were other Canadians, no Americans, no Europeans. But apparently they did a mini wave yesterday. There was 4 of them, and they during one of the breaks in play, they actually did a 4-person wave, which is quite funny. So, yeah, I mean, it's very unique for sure. When you know, between the whistles, like, the hockey to me has been every bit as good as you could expect. The hockey's been great. the atmosphere is obviously very much lacking, and it's going to be surreal, you know, when Tampa probably wins the Cup tonight, and if not tonight, probably Monday, and if not then someone's winning it Wednesday. Like, that's going to be really unbelievable. I just hope they pipe in some booze when Gary Bettman presents the Cup.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mike, moving away from the Cup Final in Edmonton and the bubble scene there, back here, the Winnipeg Jets, and the silly season is certainly on the horizon, if not already underway. A lot of talk last week linking Matt Dumba to the Winnipeg Jets. The Wild have an excess of defensemen. The Jets have obviously a need on the back end. Do you think there's a match for the Jets and the Wild, or does the Wild demand for that center ice position, a centerman, sort of leave the Jets on the outside looking in when it comes to Dumba?
Yeah, I'm not one that believes there's a fit there, guys, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I don't think divisional trades are usually a great idea, you know, for a couple of reasons. Whatever you give back, I mean, you're going to have to stare down that player or those players for years to come. And, you know, that's the kind of trade that can really come back to bite you. So I think it would take something pretty substantial to have, say, the Jets and the Wild do business with each other. And I guess the other thing is, to me, like, I like Matt Dumba, terrific, you know, all-star human being, absolutely. Really good player. I'm not sure, though, guys, is he the type of defenseman the Jets really need at this stage? I don't know. Like, to me, I think they need, I mean, certainly you can always use skill, no question. But I think you also need some size, and Matt Dumba doesn't provide that. I just don't know that he's a lot different than some of what they already have. You know, what Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk, presumably Ville Heinola, and what he's going to become. Like, I just think for what the price would likely be, and Minnesota is said to be in the market for a center. You know who else is in the market for a center? The Winnipeg Jets.
So, is that so? Haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, are the Jets giving up a centerman to a division rival when that's a position that they themselves need and you could argue are even more desperate than Minnesota? I just don't see it. And I'd be really surprised if that deal were to come to fruition.
Mike, last question for you here. Obviously, you know, we mentioned earlier you're in Edmonton, you're just outside the bubble, and you're covering the Stanley Cup Final. But, you know, earlier we were talking about Patrick Laine, and I'm sure you've heard, you know, some of the rumors that have been floating around over the last week and, you know, reading some of the headlines. And I'm sure that you're going to be covering this, you know, in the coming weeks, you know, for the Free Press. But, you know, with all of this talk surrounding Patrick Laine, it just doesn't seem like it's going away. And all of us here and many Jets fans certainly don't want to see Patrick Laine traded, or, you know, we're not going to, you know, promote Laine being traded. But is it possible that, you know, there is, you know, something to this, and, you know, the Jets are at the very least exploring trading Laine, because it just doesn't seem to go away, like I said.
Right. No, I have no doubt, Ezzie, that the Jets are listening, for sure. And they should be listening. They really should be. They should be listening on Patrick Laine and pretty much any other player in their lineup to see what the return should be. But I think there's a big difference between listening and, you know, taking action. And at this point, you know, I don't know that Kevin Cheveldayoff's doors are being blown off with offers that he can't refuse. And to me, the only way you trade Patrick Laine is if you feel like you're fleecing the team that you're trading with. If it's just a 50-50 kind of deal, yeah, this might work out, but it also might not. You know what? Walk away. Hang up the phone. To me, you know, we've already seen this team in this city, not this specific team, but they traded away one Finnish superstar sniper, right? And that's a deal that I think in retrospect, you know, the Jets, it came back to haunt them. And trading Patrick Laine absolutely has the ability to come back to haunt them. The Jets have control of Patrick Laine still for a number of seasons. There's no urgency here. He's not leaving, you know, as a UFA next season. This isn't Jacob Trouba part two. And your window should be wide open right now. Patrick Laine should be part of what you're trying to build here and part of what will help you win. To me, guys, I mean, this doesn't get nearly the talk. If you're looking to do something bold and dramatic to improve your team now, trade your 10th overall pick then. I mean, that's a pick that's nice to have, and it's going to help you in a few years, sure. But you want to win now, and Patrick Laine can help you win now. So, you know, I have no doubt that Kevin Cheveldayoff's listening. I suspect he's not liking very much of what he's hearing at this stage. And, you know, I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I just wouldn't hold my breath waiting for a Patrick Laine trade to come to fruition.
Mike McIntyre is a very wise man. He's in Edmonton for the Stanley Cup Final. Mike, drive home safe whenever that's going to be. If it's after the game tonight or Monday or Wednesday, we'll see you soon. And drive safe, and thanks for joining us this morning.
You bet, guys. Enjoy the weekend.
Take care, Mike. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joining us from Edmonton. When we come back, we talk more about last night's game four between the Lightning and the Stars. Was it a penalty? Was it a good call? Was it a bad call? Do the Stars have a legitimate gripe? We talk about that next. More Jets talk still to come as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
It's grabbed by Radulov at center ice. Deals it in. Ruda pokes it out to Victor Hedman. Cross a Stamkos down the right wing. Cross the blue line, right circle. Stamkos open. Shoot, score! Stamkos! And it's 2-0 Lightning!
Look at the players going crazy for Steven. That is unbelievable.
From the Lightning radio call, that from game three, Steven Stamkos coming in off the bench, comes in, scores a goal on his first shot of the playoffs.
He can legitimately have his name on the Stanley Cup.
It's true. And then he leaves the game and didn't play last night. I mean, it's a bizarre, what a bizarre situation.
No, he didn't leave the game. He sat on the bench.
Pardon me. He didn't play again, though.
No.
Yeah. He scores. It's like coming off. I don't even know what the analogy in other sports would be for this. It's like a field goal kicker who's been injured, the best field goal kicker who's been injured all year, comes in and kicks a game-winning field goal.
In the first quarter.
In the first quarter, and then never plays again.
And that goal easily could have been the game winner.
Yeah, it should have been.
Right? It was just so incredible, and it was a beautiful shot and an amazing pass by Victor Hedman, right? Like, just everything about the goal. I think it was Hedman that had the pass.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, and yeah, just incredible. And you got to love, you know, that Stamkos stayed on the bench, right, guys? Because you remember, I think it was last year, was it not, that Zdeno Chara couldn't play? And it was either last year or a few years ago, mm-hmm. and he was just opening the gate for
That's
the guys.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just great. And then after Kevin Shattenkirk scored the game-winning goal, they showed Stamkos now, you know, just wearing street clothes. And
yeah.
You can tell, I mean, when you talk about, you know, players that have been in the NHL for a long time that deserve to win a Stanley Cup just because how good they were, like, Jerome Iginla was one guy that, for me, I just wanted him to win a Stanley Cup so bad because he was such a good player. Ray Bourque is another guy, you know, that stands out with Colorado finally getting his cup. And for me, Stammer is a guy, right? Like, for me, he's a surefire Hall of Famer.
Stammer?
It's his nickname.
It's not your nickname for him.
No, yeah. But that's his nickname.
Yeah.
It's like calling Gretzky Gretz.
Well, it's not like
I can call him Stammer.
A little familiar.
You can't.
A little familiar.
If I interviewed Steven Stamkos once, I can call him Stammer.
You and Brett Burns had a very good interview.
Yeah,
2011 draft, you and Brett Burns.
No, but the point is, like, Joe Pavelski is that guy on Dallas.
Sure.
Right? Like, Joe Pavelski, I mean, this was, I don't think, talked about enough. He is now tied for the most goals in the playoffs by an American. Right? Like, so you're talking about, you know, the greatest American goal scorers of all time, Joe Mullen, right? Like, Jeremy Roenick, Patrick Kane is probably going to catch Joe Pavelski one day, right? Because he's, I think, 10 goals back, Dave.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's an incredible player. But, you know, for me, Stamkos, I'm happy for all these guys. Don't get me wrong. Like, the staff, everything.
Like,
but
John
Stamkos
Cooper
is a guy that's been such an elite player for so long. So that's why it's just going to be so nice for him to hoist the cup.
Well, and
you
I
think.
And I think, you know, it's a testament to Tampa Bay sticking with their plan and not really deviating and not
panicking in last year's
loss.
Well,
I was going to say, and not allowing what happened last year to really, I think all it did was motivate this team. And I think that they used, I think John Cooper is a phenomenal coach.
Yep.
I think he's a smart guy. I think the reality is that what he's done is, I mean, again, it's always easy when people are like, oh, well, he's got all that talent. But you still have to make it work. And the truth is sometimes when you have all that talent, massaging all those egos and making everybody understand how this whole thing is going to work is a job in and of itself. Right. But, you know, the reality is, again, like I said, I think he reclaims Zach Bogosian. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's...
Kevin Shattenkirk was bought out by the Rangers and has been a key contributor
Ironically, that on the day that the buyout window opens...
Yeah, he gets the game-winning goal.
A guy like Kevin Shattenkirk is the guy who scores the OT winner, right?
Well, and to your point, Dave, too, right? Like, you know, John Cooper has been a really good coach for a long time, but you mentioned Bogo... Another nickname there for you, Dave. But, you know, when you're talking about Bogo hasn't played the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. Jan Ruda has gone in, and Jan Ruda's looked really good, right? So, like, making that move, I'm not saying that Bogosian wasn't good, because I think he's been good in these playoffs. I'm just saying that it seems like, you know, Cooper has made the right moves at the right time, right? And, like, you know, you've had, the 11-7, the 11 defensemen and 7 forwards.
Other way around.
Pardon me, the 11 forwards, 7 defensemen, right? And then, obviously, you know, they've had to switch things, and, like, a guy like Luke Shen, unfortunately, hasn't been in the lineup either, right? But you've had, like, guys like Cedric Paquette and Patrick Maroon, basically, you know, without a centerman, but they've managed to, you know, either have, you know, Yanni Gourde or Anthony Cirelli playing with those guys. So I agree. The coaching has been really good. And, you know, give Dallas credit. I mean, I don't think a lot of people thought Dallas was going to beat Colorado. So give Dallas a lot of credit for getting this far. I just think that they don't have as much skill, and they look tired. And Tampa Bay is winning based on skill.
And Dallas's best players, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, Dallas's best players haven't been that good. They're superstars. The guys that are getting paid
Sagan
the most.
Sagan was good yesterday, though.
Yeah, for one game. I mean, one game. You know,
well, he hasn't had a good cup final.
No.
I'll agree.
I mean, and that's when you pay these guys the most money on the team, you expect them to show up in the biggest moments.
Just saying, he did show up yesterday.
He was better yesterday, but they wanted
a couple of points.
But Braden Point has been dominating game in, game out. Whereas Tyler Seguin has played well in one game of the five so far. Four so far. Pardon me. I can't keep track of that. That's for whatever reason, I'm having
because there's a back to back.
It's tonight. Game five goes tonight. When we come back, Kaylee Chelios is going to join us to talk more about the Cup final from the Lightning perspective. More Jets talk to come. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Want to hear from you there. You can also send us your text messages. Send us your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Tampa Bay Lightning reporter Kaylee Chelios. The Lightning lead the Dallas Stars 3-1 in the Stanley Cup Final. Game 5 goes tonight. Kaylee, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
That's great, Kaylee. Obviously, Game 5 goes tonight, the rare back-to-back in a Stanley Cup Final, but nothing is usual about this playoff run. What will it mean to the Tampa Bay Lightning franchise if they are able to win the Cup tonight? After the hardship of last year, after the trials and tribulations of getting swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets, after the calls for change that were ignored because, you know, the staff and the management still believed in this group of guys, what will it mean for them to win the Stanley Cup tonight or Monday if it goes to a 6th game, or even Wednesday if it goes 7?
I think it means everything to this group of guys and this coaching staff. John Cooper and, you know, several players in this locker room for the last 6 seasons have been to, you know, 4 Eastern Conference Finals, 2 Stanley Cup Finals now. And, you know, they've realized the window and the opportunity they've had. This group is very experienced. They have a great leadership group in the room right now. The additions that Julian Breeswell brought in, when you think about players who came into this season with an edge and kind of a chip on their shoulder, that included players like Kevin Shattenkirk and Dan Bogosian. They have a group coming into this playoff that were determined and they played the right way and, you know, changed some of the players that have the individual awards already realized this is the one thing they haven't gotten yet, and it's the Stanley Cup. And they've changed their game in ways to buy into this five-man unit and this collective buy-in that this team has had since the start of the playoffs. And now they're being rewarded for it. They have a 3-1 lead in the series, which is fantastic. And I think winning a cup with this group and some of the special moments that have happened in this playoffs, looking at Steven Stamkos' lone goal, even though he wasn't able to play almost the entirety of the playoffs, obviously, I think this is just, this is it. You know, they remind me of the Washington Capitals in 2018 who had to get over the hump, and they did. Great coach as well, and Barry Trotz, John Cooper, excellent coach, and I think he's done a fine job here. So I think this is their window, this is their moment, and I'd be shocked if they let this one slip.
Kaylee, Andrei Vasilevsky is obviously a fantastic goalie, you know, Vezina finalist, has been really good in the Stanley Cup Finals. Maybe, you know, didn't have his best game yesterday, even though, you know, some of the goals the Dallas Stars scored were really nice. But do you think he's getting enough credit for how well he's played in these playoffs? I was just thinking about this. You know, I had to, you know, double check this, but he has played every single game. Curtis McElhinney, unfortunately, you know, hasn't been able to get into any games, and we do expect Vasilevsky, of course, to play, you know, game five tonight. But, you know, you look at his numbers and, you know, .930 save percentage, you know, 17 wins. It's pretty incredible. Braden Point obviously is, you know, the front runner for the Conn Smythe Trophy along with Nikita Kucherov. But do you think enough people are talking about just how good Vasilevsky has been, even if, you know, game one and game four, he wasn't the best?
Probably not. I agree. I think maybe he didn't get off to the best start in game four, but he made some huge saves down the stretch, two left pad saves, two on a wide open look for a couple Stars players. So he's been making the timely saves, and the Lightning have been exceptional on the penalty kill as well. As much as their power play has been good, Dallas has taken too many bad penalties and kind of fueled their power play. And that's one thing their assistant coach Derek Gallant said is, we would like, you know, we want our power play to be rolling, but we have to have our penalty kill going. And Vasilevsky's been a huge part of that. A couple times again in the Columbus series and in the Islander series, he was there in pivotal moments in games, making big saves at 5-on-3. And yeah, I do think, though, he's probably the last one you end up mentioning when you talk about this kind of star-studded roster. You think of the big names, and as, you know, we should, Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov are obviously, they've combined for over 58 points so far in this playoffs. And that top line for the Lightning are plus 40. Victor Hedman's leading the charge among all players at plus 17 going to last night's game. So I'd have to check to see what it is now. But they've all elevated their game, and they're playing at a level I've never seen them play in my 4 years covering the team. So it's easy to kind of leave Vasilevsky last when, you know, you've got five players in game three, Stamkos, Kucherov, Palat, and Braden Point all scoring a goal, and Victor Hedman. And then Vasilevsky, you know, we probably mentioned him last, but like you said, he's another Vezina finalist this year. I thought he's having an exceptional playoffs. Like you said, he's playing every single game. He's going to play tonight. And I think compared to last year's playoffs, not only has this team taken a huge step, but Vasilevsky as well as should be included in that. He's been lights out for this group, the maturity in his game, being able to handle playing against three of the best defensive teams in the league going into the Stanley Cup final. Dallas obviously is too, but he was a goaltender last year in the playoffs. He struggled when he wasn't seeing shots, and against these teams where there's not a lot of room and not a lot of dangerous scoring chances early on in games, you know, he would struggle, and he struggled this year in the regular season too. The first, I'd say, two-fourths of the season or halfway through the season, he kind of struggled to find his game at times when he wasn't seeing a lot of pucks early. So I think he's come so far, and you can just see it, every goal, every, you know, momentum swing this team is, you know, they play with so much more confidence when he's in net.
You know, Kaylee, we saw something in game three that we just don't ever really see in sports, and that's Steven Stamkos playing in a game that nobody really expected him to play in, having it, scoring a goal. Obviously didn't play, you know, much after that, didn't play at all, but the reality is, how inspirational was that for this team, for him to be able to play that role, actually get a piece of the action, and obviously ultimately if they win, know that he had some role in helping his team win the Stanley Cup?
Absolutely. I think that was a amazing moment in this playoffs, and if they go on to win the cup, that's going to be an amazing moment just in franchise history for this group. He's been there supporting 100% of the way, but it was amazing, and he said it himself, kind of a dream come true to not just be able to play in a game, but, you know, five shifts, less than 3 minutes of ice time, and he's able to not just, you know, get in the game, but he has an impact, and he's able to contribute. It was an emotional moment for him, the bench, the coaches. I mean, everyone stood taller on the bench after that one, and that was kind of the coaching staff dilemma, I guess, with this whole situation with Stamkos. Is, you know, Derek Lalonde had said, we'd love to be able to have him in the playoffs, but our concern is going to be that he's, you know, inching closer, and if we try to play him, he's going to be in a too limited a role, or he's going to, you know, unfortunately not be able to play to his full potential, and in that way also maybe risk injury. And then they also, on the other hand, were like, if we can get this player in there, you know, he could probably just bring this group up too. It's an emotional need. If we get him in the lineup, you know, he's going to have a huge impact on the rest of his team. And that's exactly what he did do. And I don't think you could have written it any other way. I mean, that was amazing to get your first shot of the game, score a goal like that in a pivotal game too, and to take that 2-0 lead. I know the Lightning were on their heels after that for 8 or 9 minute stretch where the Dallas probably had their best hockey, played their best hockey of the series. But that goal was key, and that's one that this whole group is going to remember going forward. And I think it meant everything for the captain to be able to be on the ice, be in a game, get the goal. You know, regardless if this team has made it 20-plus games without him, I think they needed that.
Kaylee Chelios is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. She's a reporter for the – she covers the Tampa Bay Lightning as a reporter. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Kaylee, what is it about this Tampa Bay Lightning defense that, you know, hooks these players up to the rejuvenation machine? You have a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk who gets bought out by the Rangers, comes in to Tampa Bay, you know, scores the overtime winner last night. You have a guy like Zach Bogosian who has been – oft injured, gets his contract terminated in Buffalo, comes into the Lightning and plays a key role for this Lightning team throughout the playoffs. Even a guy like Luke Shen, who had a lousy year last year, he's bounced around from team to team on 1 year contracts. He comes to Tampa Bay and he's able to contribute. What is it about the defense or the structure of the Lightning that allows them to find these defensemen and rejuvenate their careers?
Yeah, coming into this year's training camp in September, there was a really deep blue line. It was going to be interesting to see who was paired with who, and it was going to be a little bit of a competition because Shen was brought in there to maybe play alongside Coburn, and then with what happened with Kevin Shattenkirk's contract, you know, the Lightning signed him, and then he ends up being kind of that next defenseman in the lineup, and Shen took a little bit of a back seat and was a healthy scratch for many games this season. But like you said, I mean, these are players that Julian Breezeball brought in, and they made this team better and a better team come playoffs. I think they're a young group of veterans. You know, they're not, they're players that you don't need to, you know, tell them, you know, how to play. They keep things simple. They have the experience. They have the playoff experience. And they all came in with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. Like you said, Luke Shen had a tough year last year, kind of bouncing around. Kevin Shattenkirk obviously was very unhappy with the way things ended in New York, and that was supposed to be like a dream come true situation for him. It didn't happen. He was kind of in rebuild situations, and a lot of the pressure was on him to carry the load. And kind of like a Ryan McDonagh, he comes over to the Lightning, and he no longer has to be the guy. He's playing with a group of very experienced players, a Victor Hedman, a Vasilevsky, a team that's very good, very competitive, poised to make a deep playoff run. And he feels very comfortable. And that's exactly what Dan Bogosian, I think, has done too. I mean, this is his very first playoff in 12 seasons. He had his contract terminated with Buffalo. And he hadn't played a ton coming off of an injury last season and getting surgery, so he had a lot to prove too. And another young veteran that's very talented, kind of found his game, I think, coming back to training camp before the bubble. And he was lights out. I mean, he's got a great shot. He's skating. He's a great skater. And again, another young veteran that seemed to be comfortable in a lineup full of talented players where he doesn't have to be the guy and carry the load. So Julian Breezeball, you know, he did an amazing job so far this season. I mean, it's easy to say that now, but all of the trade deadline acquisitions and the signings, the free agency sign, have been instrumental through this playoff run. The Gord line with Goodrow and Coleman have been exceptional, but defensively, this team, you know, they have the ability to score goals. When you look at Sergachev, they've got Victor Hedman, obviously. But they have Kevin Shattenkirk, too. They just have an ability to find the back of the net and get pucks through. And on top of it, they've continued to preach this year how important it is to not sacrifice the defensive side of the game. So you brought in defensemen that are completely bought in. They all are looking for that trophy. They're all kind of at a point in their careers where this is a huge opportunity, and they've all done a nice job at buying in, and now it's here.
Kayla, you mentioned Ryan McDonough there in your answer, and that's who I was going to ask you about. Of course, about 8 hours away from us is his hometown in St. Paul, Minnesota. And, you know, Stamkos is obviously, you know, going to get the Stanley Cup if, as we expect, the Lightning do win it. Could be as early as tonight. But is it safe to say that Ryan McDonough, with, you know, over 100 games of playoff experience, is probably going to be one of the next guys that, you know, gets that Stanley Cup? Because obviously him, and along with other players on the team, you know, he's never won the Cup.
I think so. He's a huge leader in this group, and I mean, I know he's had an unbelievable playoffs too. I mean, I know there's been times where maybe he's had a couple turnovers he wish he could take back, but watching him even last night, the physical way that he's been playing, some big hits, the way he anticipates passes, I mean, he's been fantastic. If there's ever a 2-on-1, I don't think there's one I've seen him not play perfectly. He's just somebody that, he's so good. He's such a good leader in the locker room. He's quieter, but he leads by example. He was a captain, obviously, in New York, and coming over to the Lightning, he just seemed to transition seamlessly, and I think he's been a huge part of this group getting to where they are right now in the last couple of seasons. The impact that he's had in this room on the younger players, playing alongside Eric Chernak and taking Mikhail Sergachev, those guys kind of under his wing a little bit. I think, yeah, there's no question. I think he'll for sure be one of the first few guys to receive that cup, and, you know, an established veteran, and he's waited his turn. He's come close, and he's been a big part of why this team is where they are right now. So I think for sure they'd reward him by letting him get the cup first, second.
You know, Kayla, it's been a long time since the last Stanley Cup for Tampa Bay, and I was reading an article about, you know, some of the passion of the fans there. I was reading what these guys were yelling, shoot, shoot, at the TV, and I guess the neighbors thought they had a gun. They ended up calling the police. It was the whole thing. Police found out it was just couple of passionate Tampa Bay Lightning fans yelling at the TV, telling their, you know, trying to help their team to win. But what's it going to mean in the community? I mean, obviously this is a Stanley Cup like no other, but what's it going to mean for the community of Tampa Bay, which we know is a very diehard community, for their team to actually come home with the championship?
It's huge. These are really tough circumstances, and I think more than anything, obviously, everyone's rallying around their sports team. But Tampa, when I came there, I was astonished at, I think it's probably the best non-traditional market, but the fan support, the signage, like all over the city, every restaurant, every doctor's office, every billboard, you know, it's a really great city to drive around through, scenic. There's tons of places along the water, but every bar and restaurant has a Tampa Bay Lightning Go Bolts jersey or flag up. And it's pretty amazing to see everybody at the games. I love the in-game presentation that the Lightning have under their VP of presentation, John Franzone, and they do an excellent job. It's like sitting through a show while you're watching the game. The fans are excited. It's loud. Obviously, it's helped that this team has been so good and competitive the last 6-7 seasons, but I really think it's going to mean a ton to this city. It's been a long time, like you said, since 2004 when they got to celebrate a cup and have a parade, and I don't know what it'll be like this time around, obviously, with COVID and how that's impacted how the celebration will take place, but this city certainly deserves it. Tampa's their team, the Lightning are their team, and they've waited a while now, obviously, with how close they've come in recent years to get this and bring it home. So I'm sure the players are beyond excited to finally be able to do that.
Kaylee Chelios covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. Kaylee, thank you so much for your time and insight. Enjoy tonight's Game 5 between the Stars and the Lightning and the possibility of it being a Stanley Cup winning Game 5. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Kaylee. When we come back, more on tonight's Game 5, much more to come on the Jets, and a lot of NHL draft talk in the last hour of the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Time for a look at the Bodog.net scoreboard. Last night, a 5-4 overtime victory by the Tampa Bay Lightning over the Dallas Stars. It gives them a commanding 3-1 lead in the Stanley Cup Final. Game 5 goes tonight, a possibility that the Cup Final ends as early as tonight. Here's what Game 4 sounded like last night.
Klingberg gains the zone and shoots one, and then I follow the score! The first shot on goal becomes a goal, and it's Klingberg! Looks like a 2-on-1 and Pavelski! Oh, he scores! Joe Pavelski! 2-0 Dallas! Pilon, let one ahead, looping on the end, his point! He scores! Braden Point cuts the lead in half! Kalorn there, that one and Prince scores! And out of midair, Braden Point, Sagan moving on in, can't get the shot away, and then it's Hook long in front, they score! It's Corey Perry, and here's one around the front, score! It's Yanni Gord, and the game is tied! Kalorn able to peel away from behind, fires one, he scores! 4-3 Tampa Bay! Now turn around, Johnny Pavelski, they score! Here's Hedman, then across now for Shattenkirk, and the shot, he scores! The Lightning win it in overtime.
Doc Emrick with the call, Kevin Shattenkirk with the OT winner. That was the Bodog.net scoreboard, brought to you by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net, make a play. So, do the Dallas Stars have another play in them, or does it end tonight, gentlemen?
Well, I think there's a good chance it ends tonight if Anton Khudobin plays the same way that he played in Game 4, because he wasn't very good. And it wasn't just, you know, letting the 5 goals in, Drew. Like, if you watch that game, Khudobin was very shaky behind the net. Like, he was playing the puck, but he wasn't playing the puck with confidence. And he just looks like a guy who, I think, you know, it's starting to get to him the amount of games that he's played. Like, Andrei Vasilevsky has played more games than him, but I think Khudobin's
had to play
18 or 19 games.
Yeah, but Khudobin's had to play heavier minutes than Vasilevsky had to play.
And, you know, when you look at that Colorado series and you talk about the Vegas series, like, Anton Khudobin has faced a lot of rubber, probably, you know, more rubber than the Trans-Canada Highway, if you think about it. So I think that there's a good
really?
Chance.
You're laughing at that?
Yeah. It's good. It's funny because I used a similar, tried to find something when I was writing about Connor Hellebuyck facing rubber. I couldn't think of it. As you just did it. I'm going to have to edit the morning papers right now.
Let's put it this way, guys. It's going to be very tough, almost impossible, for Dallas to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, if you think they can win 3 in a row, then fine. But I just, maybe they win tonight and maybe they force a game 6. But, you know, Roope Hintz, we'll see if he can play in game 5. But, you know, Roope Hintz is a guy that, you know, I think is a really good player. And you're already without Blake Como. You're already without Radek Faksa. Like, you're talking about your middle 6 forwards here. Right? So, like, Nicholas Camano, he actually had a really good scoring chance yesterday, you know, a young 22-year-old. I just think, you know, Tampa Bay is destined to win the Cup, and I just think it's just too large of a mountain to climb at this point for the Stars. So, you know, we'll see what happens tonight. You know, maybe they make it interesting, but, you know, you got to think at this point, it's just, you know, a matter of time before the Lightning end up getting it.
Dave?
I think it's 2020, so I don't suggest that anything is impossible at this point. I think that, you know, we can certainly see Dallas.
COVID contact tracing deletes both teams from the Cup Final, and nobody ends up winning.
Nothing that insane, but I think that I mean, look, am I inclined to believe that Tampa is going to take this home? Yes, I think that they will. They do it tonight. I think they've got a good chance. I think Dallas has, you know, they can make an argument. You know, they kind of like the way the Jets did after Scheifele, Laine, you band together around some controversy or you apparent controversy, manifested controversy, and then that way you can at least try and create an opportunity for your team to build on for tonight. But overall, I just think that Tampa is probably just too strong, And I think that this is their series to win.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if I'm putting money on it, which I don't have money to put on, I'm going to pick the Lightning tonight. But you also have to think, guys, that it's got to be so demoralizing for the Dallas Stars to not only be down 3-1, but to lose in overtime mm-hmm. in Game 4. The way they did...
They were up 2-0 in the game.
Exactly. They had the two-goal lead in the first period. You know, Tampa Bay ties it. And then, obviously, you know, we know what happened, you know, in the third period with Tampa Bay going up and then Dallas tying it. So it's just got to be so hard for them, especially when you have a second game of a back-to-back coming. It's not like you have a day, you know, to practice or to rest or anything like that. You have to go back right out there less than 24 hours. So I just think it's just going to be too hard for them to come back in this series.
When we come back, the buyout period in the NHL opened yesterday. We've already seen some names on the list. Should the Jets have any interest in some of the rumored names that could be bought out in this next two-week period? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.